You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net, where you can download and listen anytime on your computer, mobile device, or join us live every week, where you may have already won $10 million. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. Yep, that's what you're listening to. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and welcome to the NativeTalk.net radio program. Brandon can't be with us because he's busy moving all of his stuff to Washington State. You know, I got Danelle Reed with me, though. Have you ever moved from one place to another, like a whole other city?
I have moved, yes. For graduate school, I moved from Tacoma to our sister city, Boston, drove the whole way. And so, yes, I can totally appreciate what that move is like. And then I've also lived in South Dakota for grad school, Nashville, Tennessee for postdoc, and then Portland, Oregon for some time with Indian Hills Service. So I know moving trucks.
Now, really did well. did you move just by yourself or like with your whole family?
Oh, the first year I moved by myself, the first year away for graduate school, I was alone and kind of went on my, just by my lonesome. And then after that, my fiance joined me and he continued in and started graduate school with me. And then when I was in Boston, actually, Annette Bryan, who's one of our tribal council members.
Now, that's your sister, isn't it?
That's my older sister. She also moved to Boston with me, and we completed graduate school together. So that was kind of fun.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I can definitely attest to the fact that moving by yourself is far easier than moving with your family. I lived in Russia for 5 years, and when I went there, I was single. And it wasn't that hard. But when I moved back, I had a wife and a son.
Oh, yeah.
And moving with the family was a lot tougher than moving by myself.
Oh yeah, that like it's each number that goes up in terms of the move exponentially changes what you're moving.
Definitely. Yeah. All right. So I wanted to start today with gun control, and I created a gun theme. So let's see how this works.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
I shot the sheriff, but I did not shoot the deputy.
Well, I just killed a man, put a gun against his head.
So we're talking about guns. Now that's a big topic these days, isn't it? So what is going on with all of the violence? Everything that I'm reading these days shows that violent crime in America overall is going down, but it seems like guns and gun violence and these mass shootings are more prevalent than ever. It's all over the place. And so why, as a culture and as a country, are we getting better at controlling ourselves and violence, you know, is only going down, and yet the horrific events seem to be going up? That's something I don't get. I don't understand it.
I think that's a tough one, and I know that this is an extremely impassioned topic for a lot of folks. You know, I think the minute we start to talk about guns and managing guns or what's going on with guns, is a lot of folks will want to lean on the Second Amendment and say you can't take them away. And you know, I am definitely not fighting that amendment. I think, you know, as American citizens, we're entitled to every one of those amendments, and they're there for a reason. But I do think that the statisticians and all the experts out there who are crunching numbers will say that America across the globe has the most liberal gun laws, you know, across the board. So compared to any other country, you know, we tend to hand guns out and, you know, and we hand out as many as, so if I wanted to be a gun owner, I could own 1,000 of them, or I could own, you know, and how am I going to manage 1,000 guns? And I know that a lot of people own multiple guns, and you have to be responsible for every single one of them. So, you know, I think we are in a place where we have people owning guns who maybe shouldn't.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Right. Who shouldn't, because they can't control or manage them, due to a lack of skills or lack of resources to like put them in a gun lock. You and I talked about, you know, the expense of a gun lock, in a conversation recently. They're very expensive. Like a gun safe, I think is what they're called.
Yeah. I've always said I own multiple guns myself. Yeah. And I've always had a safe for my handguns, because I think that those are probably the most ripe for abuse. They're so easy to handle. You can just pick it up. And we'll talk about suicide later, but I got to think that pistols are probably the most used for that. And I had never had one for rifles, because you have to have a larger safe, a way to control those. And because I've got children in my house, as they're getting a little bit older, my oldest is he's 6 years old. You know, I thought it was important to get a gun safe for my rifles as well. But you do have to be responsible for every firearm that you own, because it's your home and it's your property, and you have to be responsible for what people do. You know, if your child steals your gun, I'm sorry, not your gun, your vehicle, your car, and they go crash it into something, as a parent, you're responsible for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of feel the same way about firearms. So,
I agree. I think, the problem is the laws aren't following that logic. And so, you know, where we have, and the same thing with, you know, car safety is around DUIs. And we used to, you know, in our lifetimes, when I was younger, you could drink and drive, and there were no laws that said that wasn't okay.
Or at least they weren't enforced.
Well, there actually weren't the laws. You know, about 4 or 5 decades, a lot of states did not have laws on the books to say that you cannot drink, you know, alcohol and drive. When we started seeing an accelerated rate of DUIs and people, you know, and homicides due to, you know, car death by a driver under the influence, the state started getting in line and making those laws. So we need the laws to catch up with the number of gun deaths that we're seeing. And it's not happening.
I completely agree with that. And I think,
lobbyists, uh-huh. Yeah, we have powerful lobbyists that fight that. Very logical next step is what I see needs to happen.
Well, and I'm not opposed to controls and laws that make sense, because the problem that I have, and what a lot of other folks have, is that whenever something happens, you know, they start proposing laws and things that really wouldn't change anything. Because when you ban guns in general, the crazy people, the criminals, the people who want to hurt other folks can always find another way to accomplish their goals. You've got in Washington, D.C., what a lot of people pointed out was they banned, or they had incredibly strict gun laws enacted in 1974. And every gun had to be registered. No new guns could be purchased. And a lot of people point out that violent crime shot up. But when you look at the whole statistics, what you see is it wasn't so cut and dried as ban guns, violence goes up. Because violence goes up and down all the time. And what it really looks like is it didn't have much of an effect at all. Because the people who aren't following rules still ain't following rules. And then you've got countries like Australia or Russia or England who have virtually banned guns completely, and yet the murder rates and violent crime and stuff like that is still very high. Gun deaths and gun violence is very, very low, but people are still finding a way to commit crimes and assaults and all that other kind of stuff. So banning guns doesn't necessarily stop crime. You know, so is there something that we can do to stop people? I think there is. I think that we definitely need to protect our children, for goodness sakes. You don't see any gun crime happening at courthouses because everybody is, there. You can't walk in with a knife or a gun or anything. We protect our criminals, but we can't protect our children? I mean, that's ridiculous in my opinion. You know?
I think that's a really good point, and we protect the people going into courthouses by using metal detectors, right, so that they can screen for those weapons coming in that are dangerous. Mm-hmm. And a lot of schools have done that. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. So when gang violence was at its height in the late 1980s, you know, early 90s, and gangs were, you know, that was like rappers were rapping about it and they were in it, and you know, and there were a lot of deaths due to gang violence. Communities where they tended to be their hub, like Harlem and East LA and the like, those schools put in gun detectors, yeah, or weapon detectors, right, at their front doors back then, so decades ago.
As well they should.
Children, because the guns were in their communities. So today, when we're hearing about these shootings in schools, they're not happening in the hood or in the ghettos where there still is, you know, relative, you know, the gang violence is still happening. I'm not saying it's ended, but our children in those neighborhoods aren't dying from these mass shootings in schools because they've protected their children. They're happening in upper middle class, you know, affluent neighborhoods where, unfortunately, in those systems, they think that they are immune to, you know, these devastating incidents where people are coming in and they're, you know, killing multiple children in schools. It's just the saddest, you know, expression of people suffering is that they're going to go in and cause so much hurt and harm to young people. But, you know, again, pointing to the neighborhoods and that did it right. When it became an issue of too many guns in their neighborhood, they protected their kids first.
Right.
So
kids are the most important people.
I would advocate for that to happen in our community. You know, we have our own tribal school, and I would be the first to vote to put in some protections on that campus for our children.
Amen. It's insane to me that we protect these public buildings so well, but have been ignoring our schools. Now, I understand in the past, I mean, I grew up in a world where this kind of stuff just didn't happen. You know, I grew up in Sacramento, California, and out there, because of the California weather, we don't have these schools that are like standalone buildings. They're designed where you can kind of like walk around, and they've got open air hallways and grass in the middle. So in some schools, it's probably going to be really difficult to secure. But, you know, we never had to worry about this kind of stuff. And then, you know, with Columbine in 99 and, you know, since then, it's just gotten ridiculously out of hand. And I don't know, something has to be figured out to protect our children, because they are in public buildings. And yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the cost is a non-issue. You know, you got to spend whatever you need to spend to make it happen.
I agree 100% on that.
So, you know, but I find it very comforting, and I like seeing the fact that overall violent crime is down. It seems like society is going in the right direction, except in this case. So, you know, keeping violent weapons out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them, I think, is something that we need to get better at and figure out what's going on. Because, you know, right now we don't really know how to do that. But, you know, with time, I think we got to figure it out. But, you know, to the folks who say, like, let's ban guns completely, I don't think that's going to stop violent crime or crazy people, because you can always go out and build a pipe bomb. You know, you can find online how to build a pipe bomb today. You know, I've got I've been redoing my basement, and I've got these concrete walls. And so I have to attach like plywood and stuff to the concrete. And so I basically have a gun that shoots a nail into the concrete. You modify that and, you know, now I got a nail gun. Or there's like 1,000 different weapons out there that,
sure,
if you're a psycho,
yeah,
you can use.
you can weaponize anything. You can weaponize a toothbrush. I mean, they do that in prisons. So, yeah. You know, I mean, so the most...
Or in England, where they're having an epidemic of knife violence, you know, more murders by knives there than they've ever had before. It's ridiculous.
I didn't know that. That's sad.
Yeah, they're trying to say ban knives now, anything in public, because they're being used so often to commit these crimes. And I think it's in London, the mayor of London, who's saying there's no good reason why anybody should need a knife, you know, except at home. Things like that. And so, you know, you ban one thing and people are going to find something else, but that doesn't mean that we should do nothing, you know?
I totally agree. Mm-hmm.
So, one thing that I noticed when I was reading is that 62% of firearm death, and as you're looking, you're going to find a lot of statistics about deaths by firearm. But, you know, the interesting thing is 62% of those are suicides.
Yeah.
So people aren't in overwhelming numbers, like shooting each other up in the streets. It's just not happening, but they are shooting themselves. And suicide is something that, well, for me, I've always had a hard time understanding why somebody would decide to end their own life. But we're going to talk about that in just a second, right after we take a quick break here on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast.
Sounds good.
Always remember, animals are your friends, but they still won't pick you up at the airport.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Hey, this is Steve with ThePeoplesAmmo.com. Do you enjoy the outdoor sportsman lifestyle? We've got the high-quality, reliable ammo you need, from home defense rounds to outdoor enjoyment. So check us out at ThePeoplesAmmo.com, where we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all ammo is not created equal. Visit ThePeoplesAmmo.com, where you can stock up on the quality rounds you deserve and shoot with confidence. ThePeoplesAmmo.com.
Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced.
Whoa, wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or Hard Focus. You're listening to NativeTalk.net radio podcast. Our conversations are never tested on animals. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. If you want to drop us a line, voice message, you can call in 970-278-5791 or email us podcast@nativetalk.net. As I continue with Danelle Reed about firearm safety. Now, explain to me suicide. This is your forte. This is something that you studied and you understand. What causes somebody to just take their own life? Like, do they really say, I just can't live anymore, I want to die?
They certainly will and have in situations verbalized. They will verbalize. They no longer want to be in a world if it includes the emotional suffering that they have. That's for somebody who can find those words and the like. So oftentimes they won't say that though, but they're having those thoughts. It ends up being, you know, kind of a Mazatov cocktail of a lot of things happening for most people. They might have social circumstances that they're struggling with, whether it's financial or, you know, maybe in their relationships they're struggling. Maybe their children are difficult to manage, and homelessness. I mean, it can be a lot. And then again, just that not having the emotional strength and feeling that hopelessness or helplessness that things won't change. And they don't have the resources or the support too, you know, so it's most often a combination of a lot of those things that will lead, you know, it's become epidemic across the world. It's an epidemic of a reason for death, that people are more and more finding themselves in moments of despair where their only way out that they can see to end that that feeling that's so overwhelming is by death. And we want to change that. We want to change people's perception of that, in that, you know, support is there for you. We are there for you. And, you know, to reach out for that help, because most suicidal crises are very short. They're short-lived.
Yeah. And I think what you're describing here to me sounds like something that almost all of us have experienced, a situation like that at one time or another. And even, you know, you get a breakup or you're going through the loss of a job, and everybody's felt like, well, life just sucks, you know, and I wish that I didn't have to go through this. And so for me, whenever I've come up against that, I've always said to myself, there's a way out of this. There's always a way out. It just takes time. It takes a lot of work. But in that moment, what I've always done is, I think it's normal to withdraw and kind of take yourself out of society for a little bit. Watch a lot of TV. I do a lot of time-consuming activities. I start categorizing like everything in my house, working on like my music collection. You know, just stuff to keep myself busy. And I found that if you give yourself time, you can like formulate a plan, set goals, and work on, you know, getting things started again. And
I think that's great, Clifton. And I think in a suicide crisis, time is our worst enemy. So what happens is that a suicide crisis, oftentimes when it is completed, it's impulsive. So, mm-hmm. So that time isn't there, you know, in the as short as just a few minutes, if somebody has access to that gun. So this is why we did a gun lock giveaway here in our community, is if we can lock that gun up, and people are like, well, they can just unlock the gun. Actually, in that moment, in the minutes that it takes to find the keys, unlock it, their contemplation of suicide is being questioned. And so it is, and it actually does save lives, because if that moment of contemplation isn't there, and we often encourage people to put the keys separate with a loved one who can manage them, you know, especially if they're suffering from depression or the like, because then that contemplation and the access to that gun is lengthened.
Because as I'm reading, suicide attempts, as you mentioned, are very impulsive, triggered by like that crisis right now. And so if you've got a time to just think about it. Now, those suicidal impulses are often like really intense. You know, you're feeling it in that moment, but they only last a short period of time. You said sometimes just a couple of minutes. Now, I've got a stat here that I found was quite interesting, if I can get to. Okay, so a quarter of people who are contemplating suicide and they're ready to do it, a full quarter, the time between their decision and their attempt is less than 5 minutes. Half of them is less than 20 minutes, and just over 70% is within an hour. So if you can get beyond that hour, you're only left with 29% of folks who are even going to attempt that, you know,
and
half of them is less than 20 minutes.
Yes. So that would result, I mean, having that time, having that distance, having the distance from the access really can save. I mean, we're talking in the hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, millions of people a year, because we know that while
I don't know about that, according to this, we've got 20,000 gun suicides every year. So
how many?
20,000.
Okay, so 20,000, and that only represents 6% of the attempts in our country is by gun, but it represents 54% of the deaths. So it's a highly lethal means of taking your life.
I was reading more than that. More than half of suicides and two-thirds of all gun deaths. That's what it is. So gun deaths, two-thirds are suicides.
Yes.
And half of all suicides are by gun.
Yes. Yep.
That's
right.
That's pretty serious.
And so do the numbers in terms of you just You just stated how many people die by gun death suicide, and that's only 6% of our attempters. So we have a lot of people who are suffering with suicide. It is a I've had suicidal thoughts. It's very common. And you've had moments of at least despair where it's like, oh, this, mm-hmm. my life is sucking right now. But having that time to be able to stretch it out and go, okay, I can work myself through this. I can tomorrow, I can, you know, do this, this, and this. We need to remove them from that crisis. And, so that we can
face. Yeah. And one of the things that I've always done is since I was a young kid, I've always engaged in goal setting. I understand that the situation I'm in is terrible. It sucks. But I say, here's where I am. And I try to identify where I want to be. Right. Yeah. You set goals and then you start to think about, well, how am I going to get from here to there? And if you're like trying to be proactive, you start to make decisions today, which will day by day push you forward to where you want to be. And pretty soon you find out, hey, things are pretty good. You know, you're not going to stay in that moment of despair forever. It just doesn't right. last, you know, right. but a lot of people can't see that if they're yeah. not. If they're not engaging in goal setting behavior, you know, so and that's why they're going to go to guns.
I mean, absolutely, because goal setting is a future oriented thinking, mm-hmm. right? I mean, in order to set goals, you need to be able to see that I can affect change in that future oriented plan. And when somebody is depressed and they're hopeless and helpless, they're living in the here and now and feeling like crud. You know, I mean, they're just not, they're not even looking 5 minutes from now or a day from now or 1 year from now.
Yeah, they're only looking at the moment.
That feeling has got them stuck.
Now, here's something interesting I saw. There are differences between, so you got suicide attempts, but not every suicide attempt is fatal, right? So in non-fatal suicide attempts, these are people who tried, but they didn't succeed. 55% of them are poisoning, so that's not always successful. Cutting or piercing is only 21% of those are non-fatal, and you know 20% of like other types. Non-fatal is only 0.8% if you try a gun. So chances are, if you use a gun, you're going to be successful. Fatal suicide attempts, half of all attempts that are successful are from a gun. 25% is suffocation. What are people suffocating themselves with? Is that like hanging?
Oh, that's hanging. Yeah.
Is that what
that
is?
And we actually do try to, in the suicide prevention world, we try not to call somebody dying by suicide a success, because it's, we really all are losing in that, you know, because the person has died. And
well, yeah, that's not a success for anybody.
So we like to say, well, we prefer to say, you know, death by suicide or death by gun violence, you know.
Yeah, I should have realized that.
It's and the like. Yeah. Yeah.
The way it's labeled is a fatal suicide versus a non-fatal suicide. Yeah. They didn't really call it successful.
And that's more accurate. And I think we don't use that language because it's uncomfortable, right? To say, I lost a nephew to a self-inflicted gunshot wound. He shot himself in the head. Makes people uncomfortable, right? Or even if I said, I lost my nephew because he committed suicide. That's another, that's like, you know.
Do we want people to be comfortable with suicide, though?
What's that?
I said, do we want people to be comfortable with suicide? I don't think so.
No, well, we don't. But it's, I think part of the, we talked about stigma last time we got together. And a lot of people in the world don't like to be uncomfortable and aren't comfortable talking about feelings, you know, because of the way we were raised or messages we get in the media. You know, it's been taboo. And that's why I think people suffer. I mean, we had our you know, the most recent well-known, you know, suicide death happened just yesterday. I don't know if you heard.
Oh, Kate Spade, hanging.
Right. She hung herself. You know, and so people will look at her and go, how on earth? She had everything going for her. And that's why it is so complicated. You know, I mean, she was probably one of the top designers in the world, living in, you know, supposedly New York, Manhattan is,
yeah, she
know,
was there, huh?
Well, supposed to be great.
I couldn't stand living in Manhattan. If I was in Manhattan, I would be depressed, but... You know,
I don't. You might like people it, though. Who like I don't it. Know. People. I mean, because millions of people live in Manhattan.
A lot of people like it. I'm just not one of them.
Yeah, if you're city folk.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, that's what makes it so complicated is that we end up with, you know.
Yeah, she had everything. What could her problems have been? I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, both you and I could agree, and I'm not a like, I don't follow fashion, but I know her, you know, and I know she's like well known and a millionaire and all, I mean, all kinds of, it's just, it, that's what makes the human condition so, I mean, I went into it because it's interesting, right?
Very. Very.
Yeah, because the human condition is, it's complicated, and it's, you know, we're all individuals. I mean, to the extreme.
But, you know, the thing about it, though, is with all of the violence, the majority of the violence in this country is self-inflicted. And that's something that's not really talked about because of what you're talking about. People just don't want to feel uncomfortable, and it's hard to talk about these things. But maybe that's why a national study shows that fewer than half, 39% of households with children store their guns unloaded and locked. You know, so you've got 40% of them who are locking up their guns. You know what I mean?
And that's frightening to me.
It's scary.
60% are not. And so to me, that's not controlling your own personal property. I lock my car every day when I come in my house.
Exactly.
My car gets locked. Yours does, right? You lock your car. So why wouldn't we lock our guns?
With 2 million children, 2 million children living in homes with unlocked and loaded firearms, it's not just a suicide that you've got to worry about at this point. It's an accident. I mean, because accidents happen with guns, it's one of those things that in a second, it can be over, you know? And if you limit the availability, you're going to have fewer accidents, fewer people committing suicide, fewer people who are, what was I reading? That in domestic violence situations, women are like 5 times more likely to die in a home that has a gun because the man gets angry, he grabs it, shoots her, it's all over, you know?
Exactly.
But if
I mean, it's true. I mean, having access when somebody is suffering, whether it's with anger, uncontrolled anger, with the hopelessness or the helplessness, and or any intoxicating substance like alcohol or methamphetamines or cocaine, you know, any of those agitating or depressing drugs are it's a lethal combination.
But you go to my safe, and I've got one of those big, you know, combination locks. It's got 4 numbers that you got to get like this way, just right. Turn it 3 times that way, 2 times this way. And so, you know, imagine if I'm one of these people who is prone to abuse, prone to anger. I might think, you know, oh, I'm so angry at you, I'm going to kill my wife. But if I've got to go to the safe and put in these, you know, 4 numbers, it's a process. I can't get that thing unlocked in less than 30 seconds. That may be enough time to calm me down, you know?
I mean, that whole time you're having to consider the consequence of use of that gun, right? Whereas if you just had it on the ready and you could just whip it, you know, out of your back pocket, you're going to use it in that time of high emotional distress. And you're going to have to calm yourself down enough to get those 4 numbers right.
One of the things that I've always heard people say is if you're determined to kill yourself, it's going to happen. It's the same argument of, you know, crazy criminals. They're going to find a way to commit their crimes. But we also know that 90% of people who attempt to suicide and they fail at it, you know, they don't die. 90% of them don't go on to try it again, you know? So it's a one-time thing more often than not. So if you can just put time between them. And I was reading that if you've got like, you know, whether you're talking hanging or poisoning or things like this, you've got time for somebody to find you. It doesn't happen instantaneously the way a gun does. So
exactly. That's exactly right. And I'm glad you shared that statistics because when we are able to come back and interview the survivors of a suicide attempt, more than 9 out of 10, so greater than 90% of them, would say that the moment they attempted to take their life, whatever the means, because we do have a few survivors of even, you know, like a gun attempt, they will say in that moment where they're executing the attempt, and then it's passed. So, like, let's say jumping off of a bridge or an overpass, and they've survived that attempt. The minute they have jumped off or pulled that trigger, they wish they hadn't. They regret the attempt. So So it is, it, you know, again, time is our greatest enemy in a suicide crisis.
And we're our friend. If we can draw it out, that's our friend, you know?
Yes. Yes.
So here's my question. Every time something happens in the news, everybody's talking about, you know, all of these gun control stuff that with everything we see, it's not stopping or preventing violent crime, but nobody's talking about what it does to suicide rates, which to me seems like a much more compelling argument.
Yeah.
What it seems like to me.
Well, and I agree with you. I'm convinced. I think, again, maybe it's that let's not bring something up that people are uncomfortable with. I don't know, but the statistics certainly are far more compelling, like you said, than, let's say, the number of children who died by gun violence last year in America was how many? It was by gunfire was 6,000. I mean, it was in the thousands.
We had, let me see.
I have a statistic on children. Let me see. Where is it?
Yeah, I've got it. It's like 33,000 total gun deaths, and like 2/3 of them, about 20,000, are suicides.
Yeah. Yeah. And then some percentage of that is children. And those numbers, are far less compelling than the number of people we're losing by suicide. So I think we should throw that in the mix in terms of arguing for a change. You know, and again, it's not taking them away. We've already kind of talked about gun control. Mm-hmm. But it is, we need to maybe think outside the box.
And lock them up. Seems like the easiest, most simplest way to stop a lot of this stuff, because you can control your own guns in your own house. Lock them up. You know, right. It's so simple. You know, nobody has to come take your guns away. All you have to do is make them harder to get in that moment. You know, and that's something that we don't need any laws for. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see laws that if you've got a suicide or a crime or something happens in a gun or in a house with a gun that's insecured, we should ramp up the criminal prosecution for that. Because if you do it, you're going to get a lot of people who say, well, you know, I don't want to be prosecuted just to have a gun unlocked. Make that illegal. You know what I mean? Because that's not taking away guns.
There's a thought right there. Unless people would consider having a gun, because they have to consider, are they truly responsible to have it?
Hello?
And do they want to suffer the consequences, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was younger, I probably didn't do this 100% consistently. So I'm admitting some fault here. But nobody's perfect. You know, I do not drink and drive because I don't want to.
That's good.
I don't want to end up in jail for a DUI. You know, but other people don't make that same decision, but there's laws to back that bad decision up.
Exactly.
So let's get the laws to back up.
And all you got to do, and it doesn't limit guns. Yeah. It doesn't stop guns from, you know, being the ability to own. It doesn't infringe on the Second Amendment just to say, hey, if you have a gun, it's a law that it must be secured. It's all you got to do, you know, and you're going to get responsible, good people who are gonna secure those guns in their homes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's.
I would.
Something we should consider.
Because most of us are good law-abiding citizens who aren't interested or would never go commit violent crimes, as we talked about. It's on its way down. You know, people are doing things less, but accidents and self-harm don't seem to be that they seem to be going up.
Right.
Which means that our overall gun deaths are staying stagnant, because while intentional stuff against other people is going down, suicide's going up. So, you know, I don't know. We got a problem. And I wish somebody would do something about it.
Me too.
Well, look, the one thing that I'm hanging on to is this kind of the things that are happening in the news and all the stuff that's happening. It cannot keep continuing without people rising up and say enough is enough. Something's got to be done. And there's got to be like some kind of an answer that will make everybody at least somewhat happy. You know, something that's actually going to affect real change. So I don't know.
I agree. You know, I think in November we might see some change and some shifts in some seats after, you know, the most recent tragedy that happened in Florida, that school shooting. And, you know, they're asking for restrictions on assault rifles and, you know, really their war weapons, weapons of war. And
they're really fun, though.
I'm not sure civilians need to own those things.
Do you know how fun those are? I own an AR-15. That thing is the greatest to go shoot.
No, I've never seen one outside of a TV screen.
Yeah. But they're fun.
But I would say, you know, we have to give, and I certainly hold my hands up to the young people who really emboldened a generation to show up and tell our lawmakers, you know, on the lawn in D.C. back in March when they did the No More, was it No More, right?
It's something like that.
That march to say, this, we need change in how we manage and handle guns in our country. That's
completely
what their message
was.
They don't want to see any more children dying by guns in our country.
And I think that we can all agree with that. I may disagree with some of the things that they stand for, like the ways, but their message is like, duh, who can argue with that?
It is a duh. It's kind of a duh, right?
Right.
And I can get behind that message, though. I mean, it's simple.
Well,
we don't want children dying by gun anymore.
And we got to stop that. So, all right. Well, that's all the time we got for today.
Okay.
I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. Make sure you check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. Have a great day. We'll see you guys next week.
This is NativeTalk.net Radio Podcast. When severe weather threatens...
After a roller coaster winter, we're looking ahead to what spring has in store.
A global superstorm developing off towards the Atlantic Ocean.
Run like hell and be sure to take us with you. And grab your nets so we can go fishing.